The following podcast is a live recording of a radio show first broadcast by Fresh FM with assistance from New Zealand On Air.
Kia ora everybody. Well, this is just a quick interruption to the normal start to Climate Matters because I've got a hot off the press announcement to make. Put the date of the 4th of September in your diary. That's the evening that Nelson's Sustainable Transport Strategy Group is running the popular Not Your Normal Candidates meeting ahead of the local government elections. Many of you know that every election for I don't know how long, Nelsust has run these very popular evenings. They combine entertainment. This time we've got dancers, music, and then we've also got a supper afterwards. There will also be some entertaining stuff on the way through. The committee has already received acceptances from most of the councillors that are on the ballot and are waiting to hear from others. So if you want to learn more about the candidates, hear them answer transport and climate questions, and want to join in the general fun, come to the Victory Community Centre at 7 o'clock on Thursday, the 4th of September, and come for a great evening. The evening is free, although there's a good to have koha to help defray expenses. And I have to give a conflict of interest announcement here. I'm on the organising committee of Nelsust. Anyway, with that announcement, I hope we see you. And back to the normal Climate Matters and an interview with Mike Joy. Hello, I'm Lindsay Wood, and I'm the Director of Climate Strategy Company Resilience Limited. And as you know, Climate Matters is brought to you by Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Well, today it's a pleasure to bring you the third episode of my conversation with Dr. Mike Joy, well-known freshwater ecologist. And this time we actually do get onto his specialisation of freshwater, although first of all we talk a little bit about buying our way out of trouble in the climate crisis, or more to the point, not buying our way out of it. Just as a quick recap, Mike is a doctor in freshwater ecology. He's a senior research fellow at Victoria University of Wellington. And he last time we talked about energy, the various dimensions on energy, probably not the ones you're thinking of. We touched base on the question of our lifestyles and their impact on climate and how we might change them, and that segued into seeing ourselves both as part of the problem and as part of the solution. And then Mike also gave some key takeaways. So anyway, here's episode 3 of our talk with or discussion with Mike. I do hope you enjoy it. Moving on a bit, unless listeners joined the dots in a recent issue of Climate Matters, they probably don't realize that you're one of the most valued critics of Climate Matters. You mentioned it very briefly before. You have such rigor in your own scientific work that I think you don't hesitate to give me a nudge if you think I'm a bit off beam somewhere. And I really appreciate it. I really do. A couple of weeks ago, you dropped me a note saying, and I'm quoting, "The thing that struck me about the article, and many like it, is this idea that we can buy our way out of the climate crisis." That seems well worth unpicking, and I'm going to ask you to give that a go, if you would.
Yeah. Well, what was the article about again? Remind me.
I think it was the one about how much people would contribute.
I'll be willing to pay, yeah.
Willing to put up some money up for fighting the climate crisis.
Yeah, it was a big Guardian article. Yeah, and I read that, but it's also come up when people talk about, I think at the last COP or the last few COPs, there's been talk about rich nations, you know, giving money to poor nations to fight climate change. And it's like, well, just instantly what I think is I know that GDP and greenhouse gas emissions are locked together. You know, the R squared, if you plot them, is about 0.99.
For listeners, can you just unpick what R squared is,
please? Oh, sorry. It's just a measure of the relationship between those two things. So it's just so tightly linked that every dollar increase in gross domestic product comes from burning fossil fuels. And so, and every every bit of extra money that there is in society gets spent on burning fossil fuels and so and digging things up
directly. You're not meaning just jumping in a car and driving, are you? You're meaning I go and buy something and behind
there's a whole sheet
of fossil fuel.
Yeah, the economy comes from burning fossil fuels. So every dollar that you take out of that system to go and try and fix that system comes from burning fossil fuels. So the more money that you need to do to give to other countries means burning more fossil fuels. So you kind of just, all you're doing is making it worse, not better. If you want to do something good for somebody else, it's not spending a dollar. Rather than giving them a dollar, it's not spending a dollar. If the survey had been, are you prepared to spend, you know, how many dollars are you prepared to not spend for the environment? Then we would have got somewhere, you know, then it would be meaningful because that's what you need to do. It's not about what we need to do. It's about what we need to stop doing to save the planet.
You're exactly right. As you were talking, my mind jumped to a very recent Climate Matters where I was talking about bucket lists, and I had a cartoon of a guy who, and his wall was full of post-it notes, and they were things that he never ever wanted to do again on his bucket list.
That's in a way
what you're saying.
That is a really good one. That's what we need to have on our bucket list, the things we don't
do anymore.
We all
want post-its on the wall about things we're giving up in a way, isn't it? Mike, we've covered a lot of ground already, and we haven't even come near to your specialization of freshwater ecology. I don't want to suggest what we should talk about. I'd really like to leave it to you and invite you to tell us what it is that really exercises your mind in the freshwater space at the moment, and also give our listeners a lead what you'd really messages would like them to take to heart about it.
I'm more and more struck by how the freshwater situation, particularly in New Zealand, but it would go for anywhere, but just how similar it is to the bigger issue that we've been just talking about. So in our case, the biggest harm to fresh waters recently and probably overall is the increase in nutrients in our rivers and our groundwaters and our lakes, particularly nitrogen. So we have massively intensified dairy farming in New Zealand, and we've done that. So when I was dairy farming, you didn't mention that on your list, but back in my young days, I was a dairy farmer back in the late 80s. You know, the average in New Zealand, well, certainly on the farm I was on, and the New Zealand average wasn't far from it, was about one cow per hectare. And now in most of the dairy country in New Zealand, we have four cows per hectare.
That's so huge, isn't it?
Fourfold increase. And it's not because we suddenly got smarter dairy farmers or anything like that. It's because of the inputs we put in. So nitrogen fertilizer, which was a third from Taranaki gas and two-thirds from the Middle East, and now is much more like three-quarters, maybe even more than three-quarters from the Middle East and less than a quarter from our Maui and, you know, our offshore gas fields here, which we know are coming to an end. Anyway, up until the 1990s, up until Think Big, we had a thriving dairy industry in New Zealand, but the nitrogen was fixed naturally through clover. So we had natural systems producing reactive nitrogen to grow grass to make milk. Along comes nitrogen fertilizer. In our case, it was because of the take or pay scheme we had with Shell BP. Yeah, I don't know if everyone's aware of that.
Is that the government policy that they guaranteed to use all the outputs?
Yeah, the big Shell, it was Todd around then. I think it was. They said yes, we'll prospect for oil and gas off there. Yes, we've found it. You can have it, but we had to sign up to a take or pay scheme. So.
Yeah,
we were going to pay for this huge amount of gas, whether we used it or not. So that's when the Muldoon government had to come up with that Think Big. How are we going to use all this gas? And so they came up with the synthetic fuels, the Motunui, you know, the synfuels plant, the methanol plant, and the Kapuni urea plant was built. Yep.
And I think the natural gas pipeline was
part of the pipeline
too,
as well.
It?
Yep. So then we had this, you know, excess of nitrogen fertilizer, and so it was cheap for New Zealand farmers to buy. They poured it on. They found this is wonderful stuff. It grows grass. But, of course, the clover then lost its advantage. It completely changes the microbial activity that happens in the soil. And so you become addicted to nitrogen fertilizer, because if you stop putting it on, then grass will virtually stop growing because the whole system's adapted to the synthetic nitrogen. And so that and massive increase in palm kernel came along as well. So the big palm oil industry was starting overseas, and we became the biggest, and still are, I think, the biggest importer of palm kernel. So the kind of byproduct of the palm oil business. And so with those kind of external inputs, we massively increase. So both fossil fuel derived inputs, we massively increase the intensity of farming. And the nitrogen grows grass and the cows eat it, but only a tiny proportion goes out in the milk tanker. At least 75% of that nitrogen is excreted immediately through urine onto the paddock. And in most cases, at such an intense rate that it just leaches its way. It moves very mobile nitrogen, moves through the soil into groundwater or into surface water. And that's when we start having all these problems with then the nitrogen doesn't grow grass anymore. It grows algae and the kind of aquatic version of grass. And then you get the eutrophic effect where it starts to cause big swings in dissolved oxygen and the oxygen available to the life. And so you get lakes turning over, you get fish dying, you get slime and green growth and all of the lakes turning different colors and all of that kind of thing that happens through too much nutrient. So you see where I can see how this is so similar to the greenhouse gas.
Exactly,
it's just like it's the same, but on a different scale, but it's really totally related to what we're doing.
It puts everything out of sync of nature's ability to handle it or us to work in with nature.
Yeah, that's right. The systems can't assimilate it. And so everything starts to go awry and you get in other parts of the world, not so much in New Zealand, you start to get dead zones and oceans. There's the area of dead zone around the world, they're similar to the land area of New Zealand, like off the mouth of the Mississippi River and other places where these nutrients end up in the ocean and cause problems.
Is that right? Oh, wow. I didn't know about that.
So that's another. I mean, we've got lots of currents and things to take it away here, so we don't, but we do see it in our lowland estuaries and lakes, the kind of, freshwater version of that.
But in our planet, there's really no such places away, is there?
No.
Create a problem somewhere else.
Yeah. Oh, I hope you don't mind me kind of going off track a little bit here.
No, it's good.
You just reminded me of this other thing, which is kind of related to the imagination, is this idea of a way. To me, I kind of feel that that humans are basically good, right? And if things didn't go away, like if nitrogen turned rivers red, then we wouldn't have a problem. If carbon dioxide in the atmosphere turned the sky purple, we wouldn't have this problem. If you opened the door to go outside now, opened your kitchen door to go outside, and all of the rubbish that you had thrown out in the last 10 years was piled up outside your door, you would be so aware of it. You wouldn't. And the same, I always think about, going to the supermarket and, pulling, a steak off the shelf, and you don't see the animal. You don't look it in the eye. I'm all for people eating meat if they go and catch it and kill it themselves. But for most people, they just go and get it off a shelf and they've completely lost that connection. And
it's just a product, isn't it?
Yeah, but so that's that helps me explain why we live like we do, because we've lost all those connections to the realities. If you were going out to get in the Tesla and you had to see the mine and the people that were involved and the harm that was done to build that thing, you wouldn't have it. You'd go out to your push bike and probably one made out of wood or bamboo or something if you actually could see the impact of what's in your life,
Those cobalt mining mines are dystopian, aren't they?
I know. It's all of those things, they're just, where we don't see them, that So the goodness, the good bit in us that would stop us from doing that is effectively broken, and marketers are really good at making sure we don't see any of that stuff.
You're absolutely right. It's sort of hidden from view, in fact, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. Well, they go to a lot of effort to make sure that we never see the impacts of those things that we do. So
totally, that's right. You know, a big polluting company gives $10,000 to save a kiwi or something.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Oh, yeah, they're good at that. Yeah.
Well, now I would like to gift you a magic climate strategy wand. I love to do this, just like Nate Hagins does. If there was one climate policy that you could conjure up with a magic wand, what would it be, and why do you think it deserves pride of place?
I guess that it's inevitably going to be about degrowth and something that you touched on, which is sufficiency, and it kind of comes back to everything that we're talking about, even just now, that the really important things in life are really simple and they don't cost lots of money. And, you know, it's drinkable water and a roof over your head kind of thing, and community and connection. They are the really important things, and that's all that's really important. And somehow getting out of the trap of technology and growth and, you know, all of that interconnectedness, that globalization that we kind of think is so important. You know, I mean, it's the advantage of being old buggers, I think, is that we can remember a time when things were much more simple. You know, I always talk about the fact that when I was a kid, the per capita energy consumption in New Zealand was 1/3 of what it is now. And yet life was fine.
They weren't miserable times, were they?
No, exactly. Yeah. No, so,
absolutely. And picking up on that and your earlier comments about GDP, I mean, I'm sure you're familiar with them too, but there are plenty of graphs around that show the effect of increasing GDP on human well-being. And if you're on the breadline and you're struggling to get a roof over your head, then extra GDP can make a big difference. But there very quickly comes a point when the essentials are met, when a lot of increase in GDP makes very little difference to your well-being, isn't it?
No, exactly. And I think that if you looked at, you know, other issues like drug use and health and things like that, they actually start to go down again. They, you know, the more money you have, they actually go into reverse.
Which is totally counterintuitive, isn't it? Well, Mike, I would like to keep talking, but I want to respect the fact that you're presenting to a youth CHOGM very soon, and I'm sure you want to get your head in that space.
Yep.
So that's good. Thanks so much for joining me and for joining the listeners on Fresh FM. You never know, I might tap you on the shoulder for another one in a year.
Yeah, that's fine. No, that's great.
And
thanks
I really
for all
look
your good
forward
work.
To hearing you on the Nate Hagins show too. We both rate him. So good luck, and thanks for all you do, and thanks a lot for joining us.
Great. Thanks, Lindsay. Thanks for all you do. Cheers.
Well, a final big thank you to Mike Joy for his generosity with his time and his skills and for everything he does. He's a tireless campaigner for things that are important to the future for all of us. So thank you, Mike. I do hope you enjoyed that. And as you know, of course, you're listening to Fresh FM, the top of the South's community access radio station. Fresh FM broadcasts in Blenheim on 88.9, to Eastern Golden Bay on 95.0, to the Nelson CBD on 107.2, and across the Nelson Tasman region on 104.8. It's also streamed to the planet on freshfm.co.nz and podcasts of Climate Matters and of other locally produced shows are available through freshfm.co.nz and through the accessmedia.nz app. And finally, just before we close off, another reminder that in a couple of months we've got the local government election. I'm sure you'll be seeing it hotting up in the news, even though I'm recording this in early July. And so if you want to get some climate insights on that, do check out the Resilience website, www.resilience.co.nz, and navigate to the Climate Trust and the Climate and Councils podcasts, and you'll find 16 experts in climate and related fields giving their views on the relationship between climate and local government. It is 3 years old. It is still pertinent. Thanks for that. Thanks for your company. And of course, kia kaha for the climate.
The podcast you just listened to was a live recording of a radio show, first broadcast on Fresh FM with support from New Zealand On Air. Fresh FM is a community access media station based in Te Tauihu, the top of the South Island, New Zealand. The funding of Access Media makes these podcasts possible. To find similar programs by other community access media stations, go online to accessmedia.nz. If you or your group would like to know more about how you can have a program on our station, please contact us. Visit our website, freshfm.net, for our contact details.